It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Welcome to the latest episode of the Shamrock. I'm Pete Sampson, joined by Matt Fortuna after Notre Dame's 12-7 win over Louisville. Not in any way, shape, or form what I expected today in terms of the scoring margin, how Notre Dame played offensively. Certainly a much better performance defensively from Notre Dame. The time of the game, a lovely 2 hours and 52 minutes.
Wow, might be shorter on this podcast.
But just like the only thing that was consistent from last week to this week is Clemson scaring the living crap out of you if you're a Notre Dame fan. I guess, Matt, from a distance, what did you take away from Notre Dame's performance today? I certainly have some takes from a local perspective.
I have some takes as well, and I got to be honest, I'm just not as doom and gloom as everyone is about this performance. I know, like, Notre Dame Twitter is burning at the seams right now. I can kind of see the smoke coming from your bald head in that private tiny room of yours in Notre Dame Stadium right now. Look, it wasn't pretty. And when you put that in one picture and you put Clemson having the biggest win in the history of the ACC over a conference opponent in another picture side by side just a couple hours beforehand, yeah, it should scare the crap out of you if you're a Notre Dame fan. I get that. I just think it's 18 to 22-year-old kids playing a game where the ball bounces funny, and most of them lose this kind of game when you don't have your A game. Notre Dame at least has the best offensive line in the country. And even though they didn't always look like it, there's something to be said for getting the ball with, what was it, 7+ minutes left and just saying, all right, game over. Stop us. You won't. You're going to need more than that to beat Clemson. And every conversation we have from here on out is going to be put in that light. So I get it. It's not a pretty picture. But, like, shit happens. Like, they won. Like, I'm kind of the Brian Kelly, and even Ian Book, who sounds more and more like Brian Kelly and Tommy Rees in his post-game interviews. Just kind of, you know, cool, calm, and collected, nothing to worry about. We got a good offensive line. We're going to lean on them. I'm kind of, like, taking on their identity, I guess. I mean, I get why people are freaking out, but I also think it helps to have adults in the room in high places like those guys are. Who don't freak out, who know that this happens, know they got to get better, know that they don't need to go all rah-rah and scorched earth to say we got to get better. I mean, I don't know. They still pretty much impose their will on this game for the most part. I know 12-7 doesn't exactly scream that off the front page, but I think they had a weird game. It felt like a Navy game, you know, in terms of both time and
yeah, but Notre Dame was Navy, right?
Notre Dame won. I don't know. Does that mean they're Navy or Notre Dame? I don't know. I get the doom and gloom. I get it. I just think it's like, all right, it's over. Like, they won. No one got hurt, which usually happens against Navy. And that's that. Like, put it behind you.
I mean, those are fair points. And, I mean, I agree with certainly the running game. I think it's come a long way that they could rush for, I think, 232 yards today. And you're not sitting there thinking, like, what a dominating performance on the ground where, you know, 200 yards is just sort of, yeah, okay, 200 yards. It wasn't that long ago that was not the case here. So that's something, and I agree with that. I sort of looked at the performance today based on Brian Kelly's commentary after the game to NBC about how this was a learning experience and think, well, wait a minute.
They're teachers. They also said that.
Yeah, you have a third-year starting quarterback. You got 5 starters back on the offensive line. Very old at receiver. You know, maybe not game-breakingly talented, but old. That the offense should have it together more than it did. And I think that's a fair criticism without being a total freakout. That a freakout would be Notre Dame doesn't have an answer at quarterback. You know, the offense is broken. I think that this is much more of a case of Like, Ian Book needed to see the field better than he did. However, at receiver, they sort of are what they are. You know, what Javon McKinley did last weekend against Florida State is the exception. He is a sort of a complementary piece in the passing game. I thought Ben Skowronek showed some real veteran savvy today, particularly on that last drive for that 13-yard gain. And I think you saw why we've been talking about Kevin Austin for the better part of 2 years. You know, he was a toe tap from really removing all drama from the game. As I think Notre Dame would have been up 13-0 at halftime at that point, if he scores there. But, you know, didn't happen. But you can see what's going to happen with him. I really think that, you know, Notre Dame was a sharp sort of mental performance from Ian Book and just more juice at receiver away from comfortably winning this game 27-7. But they didn't have either of those things today. We'll see if they have them moving forward. They need both of them. I think even just to go 10-1 in the regular season, they need both of those things. But, you know, today, 30-mile-an-hour winds, it was a little blustery. Ian Book said it was the windiest game he's ever played in. You know, I can't think, but that sort of took away from that happening in the second half.
I think you look at the learning moment and teaching moment comments and think, kind of like we've been saying all year, like, this team's going to need to get pushed at some point before Clemson, whether that came from its own undoing or Louisville just having a really good game plan. I think they got tested today in a way that we did not expect them to get tested really all season outside of that November 7th game against Clemson. So I think that's where that comes from. Brian Kelly, interesting press conference when I think you had asked him about reminding the team to celebrate wins, and he said, I don't even know if it aesthetically looked bad, which, I mean, it did, Brian. But he also said, he said, I've been in a 12-7 game when it was, and I quote, a stinker. And we were reminded quickly that Brian Kelly is a Boston native.
Boston accent comes out.
For Virginia. It rarely comes out, but it does come out from time to time. Even the alma mater, though, and I'm curious, you were in the building, but, you know, they play it on TV. The alma mater felt like a funeral. Like, everything about the day just felt like a drag and some, like,
yeah, I mean, just, I did not hear it, but
just
some
like
other reporters,
the looks on everyone's faces, and I don't know, it just felt like everyone was dragging it out.
I'm talking about something else. I did not hear this, but other reporters said that they heard boos from the students.
So that was another point I was going to bring up, actually, is you never wish for this situation, but, like, it's a good game and a good year to have this performance, because, like, when you play a bad game against a team you're supposed to win, almost like in March Madness when there's an upset, like, you feel that momentum just get sucked right out of you. And I think that happens when you have 80,000 fans who are rooting you on all of a sudden get silent or boo you. And you just don't have those kind of fickle wins, if you will, in a situation like this season where you only have 10,000 people.
Yeah, I didn't get that vibe in the stadium at all. I mean, look, Notre Dame's, they've won 22 straight at home, 10 straight overall, and I believe 28 straight against unranked competition. So they're not in a position where I don't want to say they're immune to that, but they're pretty close. You know, you mentioned at the top of the show, like, hey, it's 18 to 22-year-olds. And look, I get that. That's true. You look at the roster and their birth dates, they are 18 to 22-year-olds. However, I think they're incredibly reliable in these spots to ultimately win the game, regardless of whether it is a high-scoring game, low-scoring game, today almost a no-scoring game. I mean, this was the fewest points Notre Dame had scored in a home win since 1978 against Purdue. So you got to go back a ways.
Your birth year?
No, 1977 for me. I had yet to – I think I had just turned one when that game occurred. So I think that Notre Dame is really reliable. You might not always like what you get if you're a fan watching it on TV, but in the end result, you will, if you can strip away the box score and maybe how it looked and how it felt. This was, I definitely want to enter this into the record. Unlike Florida State, which was like a little back and forth. I mean, they've played in some games that have been tight against overmatched teams. When Louisville almost recovered that onside kick, I thought that they were going to score there and Notre Dame was going to have to play from behind for a minute. I think they still would have won the game, but I thought that Louisville actually put real game pressure on them in a way that Florida State did not, Duke did not, that they haven't been under in quite some time.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned Kevin Austin being a toe tap away from kind of eliminating all doubt in this game. I mean, I think there are two plays in this game. There's that one, which if it goes Notre Dame's way, we're having an entirely different discussion about this game. And I think there's the onside kick, which by the letter of the law was a good rule. I mean, I did not know about that rule. Mike Tirico and Tony Dungy certainly didn't know about that rule from the sound of it. And I didn't know you could review for that rule when reviewing to see how far the ball traveled. Those damn ACC refs always giving Notre Dame a break here. Between that and not counting Louisville's downs right on their ensuing possession, which I still couldn't really follow. I think that's, like you said, that play stands, and I think that's when you, like, feel it in the stadium and probably on the sidelines, the way you were kind of on the precipice of but never quite got over that hump of panic mode during the game today because they were playing up front. Even Louisville, I mean, as much as everyone's hyping up Louisville, they missed the field goal. It was as entertaining a missed field goal as you'll ever see at the end of the half and bouncing right off the middle of the crossbar. But it just wasn't – I mean, I just felt going to halftime like, wow, that was the most dominant 6-0 deficit I've ever seen in my life from Louisville. You know what I mean? Like, it's going to take a lot for – a run-of-the-mill ACC team, which most of them are, to beat Notre Dame if Notre Dame's not turning the ball over, and they weren't today.
I agree with that. And they, other than Clemson and North Carolina, they only play run-of-the-mill teams the rest of the way. So, they're not going to play more than two ranked teams this season. That is a lock. So, at a minimum, that's 9-2. I think that if this team is as good as Brian Kelly thought it was going to be when they sort of preseason got going, when he sort of described it as, you know, maybe the most talented team that I've had, you know, 10-1 is sort of the bare minimum. And then, you know, you want to see them put on an A-plus effort against Clemson, even if they lose here, you know, something comparable to Florida State in 2014 right, or Georgia in 2017, or maybe less so Georgia last year, because I think that was a game where you felt like Notre Dame was the less talented team from the get-go. You'd like Notre Dame to look like it, they're not just sort of having to roll the dice against Clemson, that they have a game plan to control the ball. And I don't know, oddly, I think that, you know, if you said that, all right, what's the game plan for Clemson? Well, you know, Ian Book throws fewer than 20 passes. Right. Notre Dame controls the clock, you know, wins time of possession by almost 13 minutes, no turnovers, few penalties. And Kyron Williams runs for $1.27, you would say, all right, pretty good game plan. But obviously,
I was thinking Louisville's, that same thing.
Louisville's defense, Louisville's defense, Clemson's defense. I mean, they're both defenses, but that's the only comparison that you would make between them.
So when Notre Dame took over, with just over 7 minutes left for what ended up being their final drive of the game, Mike Tirico, I think, encapsulated the mood of Notre Dame fans succinctly when he said, and I quote, "This is Notre Dame's seventh drive of the game. Clemson scored 7 touchdowns in the first half today," end quote. When everything's in that light, yes, like, today sucked, but, like,
it's everyone's favorite parlor game. Like, is this good enough to beat Clemson?
Well, I tweeted it. I mean, DraftKings immediately put the odds for that November 7th game from 10.5 to 13.5 as soon as Notre Dame's game went final today. And, frankly, a little surprised they didn't make it more than 2 touchdowns. But that's the world we live in right now. The other part, by the way, that also I think contributed a little bit to the angst was fake field goal. Weird.
Yeah, so Brian Kelly said he called it, that on tape Louisville gave a look that they thought that would essentially be a touchdown for Jay Bramblett. Didn't really come close to that. And, I mean, it was just a strange play. The weather conditions are odd. If you know it's going to be if your feel of the game is like this is going to be low scoring,
right,
then a field goal is worth more than 3 points. You know what I mean?
And he said we had goals instead of, what did he say? He made some soccer analogy.
Goals instead of touchdowns.
But, like, you didn't really. Like, you didn't take all the points.
In that instance, they didn't. You know, it felt like if you watch the EPL, sometimes managers come in and they draw a pretty big distinction between the result and the performance. And I think that Notre Dame in that realm was like, totally fine with the result today, but not at all happy with the performance. You know, Ian Book talked about got a lot of work to do. I think, you know, the receivers getting better are a big part of that, whether that's Skowronek's health or sort of keeping McKinley sort of mentally sharper. Certainly Austin getting healthier. Brendan Lindsay had a soft tissue injury, which is why he did not play a whole lot today.
Hamstring was what I was told, which sounds about right.
Yeah, so it's like between you've got, you know, Mike Mayer, Kyron Williams, Chris Tyree. I mean, they have some weapons. They're all just sort of inside the box. They need something outside by the numbers to compete with Clemson and North Carolina, and that remains a work in progress. That doesn't mean they can't finish that job before Clemson, but I believe that just pull up the tweet. Carter Carroll's at the South Bend Tribune tweeted this out. All of Notre Dame's wide receivers threw four games, 23 catches, 259 yards, two TDs. Chase Claypool threw four games last season, 21 catches, 286 yards, one TD.
I would add to that, Claypool threw four NFL games this season, 13 catches, 261 yards, four TDs, and a rushing TD. Four TDs last week, which was more than his successors have combined for so far this season.
Yeah, it's a strange spot to be where you're running an end around with Javon McKinley. It gets 14 yards. You get a first down. You move the chains on that. But it's just not a, you know, and then you throw the 2-point conversion to him as well.
It's like, so I thought it was a little premature to go for it in a game where scoring was at a premium, and then not going for it also just kind of like contributes to this world as sky is falling atmosphere. Yeah.
It was just sort of a weird use of personnel. I'll be curious to see how that develops in terms of the receiver usage moving forward. Do you play McKinley and Skowronek at the same time as much? Do you move Kevin Austin around, which they did? I mean, we saw him sort of lined up in the slot. We saw him lined up outside. I mean, athletically, he's a threat that those other guys are not. Reliability, not there. But, certainly that's, I think, where Skowronek is your best receiver, is you know where he's going to be. Third down, trying to keep that drive moving at the very end. I would totally get having Skowronek in the game to run that drag route across. You know, I think it was 11-yard, maybe a 13-yard reception on third and seven. That's where I think Skowronek can be a real asset for you. But you need Kevin Austin to also be that asset. It's almost like McKinley and Skowronek are very similar types of players, very physical, good blockers.
Both beasts.
Both
beasts. Well, excuse me, one's a beast and the other's a
safety blanket? Safety What's valve? That? No, not safety valve, safety blanket.
Okay, sorry.
That was a bit of a stark difference between those two receivers, even though I think their games are somewhat similar. And then you need Lindsay back. You need more from Austin. I think, Lindsay's been in and out of the lineup so much that I think it's hard to sort of bank on his health still being there throughout the season. Austin, I realize he hasn't necessarily impacted the roster in about a year and a half, but, it was a nice catch, even though it was out of bounds. And I thought that his 18-yard reception that he did have this guy's a plus athletically. He can make somebody miss the way Mayer can hurdle somebody, the way Tyree and Williams can juke somebody. He's not somebody that you just throw the ball to and he gets tackled. Like he can sort of let you play 11 and a half on 11 when he gets the ball. So that is just so critical, I think, for Notre Dame moving forward, because he can just make plays that a lot of the other receivers can't.
I thought a couple of the post-game comments from a couple different parties were interesting. Brian Kelly, I wouldn't say single out because he named pretty much all of them, but so Kevin Austin, Ben Skowronek, and Javon McKinley and Braden Lindsay have to make more plays. I wouldn't disagree with that. I think it's a question of if those guys right now are capable of making those big plays more than anything else. I think Ian Book saying that the first two drives throwing was a big emphasis was enlightening, if not surprising, even though it wasn't surprising. But he also said, asked about adjusting to the win. He said, Tommy Rees came up, said, we're going to do what we're going to do. We didn't just feel like the win was too hard. And we said, okay, we're done throwing. The run game's working. And that's been there for us the entire year. Part of me wonders if this is just one long slow play to unveil a completely different playbook in the only game that actually matters this season. I don't know if they'll go that far, but
are you saying this is all like a really long con, like a 2-month con?
Exactly.
Okay. Interesting.
That said, there's more to this Irish offense than we've seen. There has to be, right?
there has to be. If there's not, I would really put the onus of that on the staff, because it's not like they don't have talent in Austin, Lindsay, Mayer, Tremble, Williams, Tyree, Jordan Johnson in the freshman class, who really hasn't done anything. There is talent to make the offense do more than it did today, a lot more than it did today. And by the time Clemson shows up here on November 7th, they better be able to pull some of that out. Otherwise, and I'm not saying that Notre Dame needs to try to match Clemson in a gunfight, but man, they're going to at least have the threat of somebody running down the field and Ian Book throwing it to them. And I think if you were watching Notre Dame right now, you would question whether that you need to have more than one guy deep, that you can't put eight guys in the box and see what happens.
I'd question whether they can do that against North Carolina after today. Now that game's so far down the road and both teams will look so different from an identity standpoint that that's just not really a concern right now. But yeah, I mean, they need more playmakers. I mean, you mentioned the freshman and Kyle Hamilton, who always gets an honorary shout out on this podcast. His breakup on that first drive of the game on 2-2. When you watch in slow motion, it's like, how did, like, wait, he didn't touch him. You know what I mean? Like, he just kind of flew over him to bat that away. And then Michael Mayer made a leap shortly after that in the second quarter that also reminded you that, like, stars matter. These guys are five stars for a reason. They are absolute freaks athletically. I do appreciate
as first reported by Ari Wasserman.
Right. I would say as first reported by Pete Sampson, Kyle Hamilton's really good. In a group text during the game today, he tried to compare himself to finding the cool indie band for being on the Kyle Hamilton hype train before everyone else. Newsflash, Pete.
Great. I'm the conductor on that.
There's no indie band when you're a five star, okay? That's like saying I knew about LeBron James in high school. Yeah, so did my grandmother. She gets Sports Illustrated. Like, that doesn't count.
No credit given. I can't believe that. This is why you do the ad reads, Matt. Because you won't give me any credit for finding Kyle Hamilton.
I'll give you credit for picking Notre Dame to beat Clemson.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks for bringing that up during the game. You know, defensively, you know, let's see, Louisville finishes with 219 yards. You know, around 4 yards, a little over 4 yards per play. It was a nice bounce back performance for that group after kind of a ragged, weird, awkward game against Florida State. Jeremiah Usikoramoro looked great. Kyle Hamilton looked great. You know, I think last week they got in some bad matchups, whether it be Houston Griffith matchup with receivers, or there was a one play where Florida State got Tamion Terry matched up against Shane Simon, a linebacker. There was no instances today where I felt like Javian Hawkins or Tutu Atwell got a favorable draw before the play started. That Notre Dame sort of had all the answers for those kind of moments before they got down the field. So I give Clark Lee and that defense a lot of credit for cleaning some things up. Cause I mean, I don't know what it's going to take to slow down Trevor Lawrence and Travis Etienne, but it's going to take a performance that is so sharp and so clean and so crisp and so disruptive. And they're going to have to gamble and put Clemson behind the sticks. But a performance like today, I think it gets you, if I think we talked about this last week, like Javon McKinley's performance was more exception than rule, but I think that against Florida State, but the defense was also more exception than rule against Florida State. This was the rule today. It's really hard to score 13 points on Clark Lee's defense. And Louisville didn't really even come close to that.
No, you asked a good question of Jeremiah Usu-Karamoa about, you know, what does it mean to be simpler on defense? Cause that was a talking point they had post game. And he said, cutting down the amount of calls we have. And I think this is the perfect game to do that. Right. Like it was a very fundamental, our in is better than your in. I think on both sides of the ball kind of performance for Notre Dame today. It's interesting because that Louisville scoring drive was really impressive. I mean, they took 7 minutes, 37 seconds off the clock to open the third quarter. And then they got the ball back and you're wondering, when is Notre Dame going to get the ball back and how's this defense going to bounce back from being on the field so long as Louisville takes it over at midfield? And that was really a game changer, I think. I mean, it was, again, it was the right call and it should have never come down to that. But I think that was a big turning point for that game because that's the Notre Dame came out and scored right after that as well.
Yeah. And I guess I need to correct myself because there was one play in that drive where they got Javian Hawkins matched up with Drew White in pass coverage, and Drew White sort of got he flowed that inside.
That was like watching in slow motion on TV. Even Tirico was like the ball, and like it was a terrible throw. Like
half just hung throw, in the air. A touchdown. So I mean, that was okay. So one snap, they got the matchup they wanted. One snap out of 45. That's a win for Clark Lee. It was, and also at that point, you're playing without Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah, who was out of the game for, I think, just two plays, but that was one of them, where they bring in Jack Kaiser as sort of the backup rover linebacker. So that's it. You know, that's Louisville's one big play of the game. The other one could have been the special teams play on the kickoff immediately afterwards, but other than that, there were not a lot of instances where you felt like Louisville's what a sharp call that just like it got tipped at the line or somebody dropped it. There wasn't anything like that. And I think conversely, I think in the first half, at least there were a few moments where you felt like Ian Book could have been picked off on drives that ended in field goals. And that's, you know, that can be a little bit uncomfortable. I'm not saying there were like five of them, but there was McKinley in the end zone that was missed. I believe there was one to Mayer going down the sideline that I don't know if I got hung up in the wind or what happened there. You know, those are slightly concerning because after the fact, I think we sort of ignore those moments, turnovers that weren't. But at some point, if you do that kind of stuff, they will pick it off. That will be a turnover.
Brian Kelly was again asked to evaluate Ian Book's game, and he said, quote, "When the game's on the line, you can count on Ian Book to make big plays for us, and that's a good feeling to have."
He said, "Shut the hell up, stop asking me this question."
Yeah, right. I mean, he keeps getting asked it because he keeps giving like the fan mad an answer. Like that's how like I would describe, you know what I mean? Like that's how me and you describe him. I think people are looking for more insight, and we've never gotten a true evaluation of Ian Book's game from Brian Kelly, who I know doesn't technically coach the quarterbacks anymore, but is a guy who's made it 30 plus years in this business by usually doing a good job with quarterbacks. So
yep.
I don't know if he leaves you. I don't know if Ian Book leaves you wanting as much more as everyone else seems to indicate. I mean, I think he got sacked four times today, which was four. I think they had three coming into the game on the season.
Yeah, I believe that's right.
I mean, he kept a lot of plays alive today. I mean, that touchdown run was phenomenal and needed and necessary.
He had a really nice block on
– he had a great block.
Chris Tyree's run.
I don't know if it made a difference, but it was very entertaining to see him.
No, I mean, the guy that he blocked made the tackle just 5 yards later than he would have otherwise.
Yeah, after the first down, yeah. I mean, it was a good play. It was fun to watch live. By the way, we can't escape this podcast without talking about another Notre Dame offensive lineman going viral for entirely different reasons than Lee and Meichenberg did last week. Tommy Kramer, don't enter your name in Twitter right now. If you're a relative of Tommy Kramer listening to this.
I missed that, and perhaps I will continue to miss it.
It was the butt fumble without the fumble part. That's all I'll say.
Okay. Are you trying to tie this into a sponsorship, Fortuna?
Wow. I am. I'm just getting beaten left and right on this podcast here. I'm getting beaten worse than defensive lineman trying to go up against Lee Meichenberg this year.
Oh my goodness! Yeah, it was. I mean, overall, look, 12-7. I think the same way that Florida State was it. I can't remember the score. Was it 52-26?
42, right?
42. Yeah, 42-26. I'm not sure that you're going to remember anything about these first four games on when you're sitting in Notre Dame Stadium at 7:30 p.m. on November 7th. Like, is there anything that will have happened up to this point that is really going to be all that relevant when they play Clemson?
Not publicly, not for us, not for the fans. No, maybe internally they're building toward it, but no, I mean, different season, different opponent, different circumstances. So I want to be careful here when I make this comparison. But going into that Oklahoma game in 2012, which is still kind of the defining win of the Brian Kelly era, and I feel like everyone thought Oklahoma was going to kill them that game, even though Notre Dame was undefeated going into it. And they end up winning largely on the arm of Everett Golsing with that 50-yard pass to Chris Brown, who I don't think had made a catch all season.
I believe
it
was his first career catch and only catch of the season.
And we hear Brian Kelly afterward talk about just how many times they rep that behind the scenes and how they're waiting for the perfect moment. And you'd have to think there's a lot of that type of those types of scenarios going on as far as preparing for Clemson, because you're just, I mean, Pittsburgh has a good defense. They're not the steel curtain, and we don't know who's going to play quarterback for them next week. And I don't think it's really going to matter. Georgia Tech, Georgia Tech took care of Louisville a little bit better than Notre Dame did, so I don't want to be smirched. I thought
Georgia Tech's season was canceled after today.
Everyone's talking about how terrible Trevor Lawrence is. Last I checked, he didn't opt out. I mean, he's not that charitable.
Yeah, he is also a winner. I think that it's
he might not even be the best player on that team, by the way. That's not taking anything away from Trevor Lawrence. Stop it.
I think it's worth looking back at some previous Notre Dame seasons, whether it be the performance against Purdue in 2012, not really indicative of a team that's going to run the table.
Pittsburgh.
Last year, they play at Louisville. The defense is sort of all over the place. New Mexico, whatever, sort of a throwaway game. But then they go to Georgia and play in a way that they haven't played all year. I would even throw the Florida State from 2014 in there. They really look bad against North Carolina here. Marquise Williams was the quarterback. I mean, really bad. I believe that they won like 50-43 in overtime.
That's about right, yeah.
And then they go down to Florida State and just have it completely buttoned up. Great game plan offensively, defensively, almost pull that thing out. So it's, I mean, they've delivered in big spots and played up in big moments before where you wouldn't necessarily have seen it coming based on what they had shown to date. So it's, in some ways you look at this and say, was today good enough to beat Clemson? No. But is it relevant to how they're going to play against Clemson? I'm not so sure that it is.
Right.
Other than, you know, where Notre Dame needs to get better. And if they get better in the next 4 weeks, then they will have a puncher's chance against, or next 3 weeks, they'll have a puncher's chance against Clemson.
Yeah, I mean, in summation, because we're doing these right after the games and you know, we're prisoners of the moment, I came out of last week thinking, you know what, I can't wait for that Clemson game. Like, they might not beat them, but they got a chance, and it's going to be a fun game. I can't say I sit here looking at the 12-7 box score.
No.
Feeling the same way, but that could also change next week when they go on the road for the first time, which will be interesting for its own reasons, just because that's not something they've done in the calendar year 2020 so far.
Yeah, absolutely. It'll be interesting if they can get through Pittsburgh. I mean, I think Georgia Tech is no challenge whatsoever. Next week we'll guarantee that Notre Dame will be undefeated against Clemson. And Clemson is already guaranteed to be undefeated against Notre Dame. I don't even know who they play the next couple weeks.
Clemson?
Do they play anybody?
Well, they're in the ACC, so no.
Okay. I mean, they don't play North Carolina. They already played Miami, and Notre Dame is
they
not
play
in the next
Boston
2 weeks.
College?
Okay.
I mean, I know they play them. I'm not saying that like they're going to lose. Yeah, they play Boston College. Okay. Oh, sorry. Syracuse next week at home,
which is
actually the last team that ever beat them in ACC play, and almost did it again. Syracuse, Boston College, yeah. And then Notre Dame. Both Clemson games are at home.
Okay. All right. So Clemson's undefeated. Notre Dame gets through Pittsburgh.
You really need to hear who they played before you said Clemson
and then we'll
would
see.
Be undefeated.
Yeah, I don't know why it's like, oh, they're playing the Steelers. I didn't know that. When did that game get to make the schedule? So, yeah, I'd say that it is looking highly likely that we will all get what we want on November 7th, which is number one Clemson versus, I guess, depending on how tonight goes, number three Notre Dame or number four Notre Dame. But it should be a
I don't know. Ohio State and Penn State are top 10 teams, and they might leap them.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if Ohio State's performance against Nebraska next week is going to
– I meant after today, but yeah, I forgot they're actually playing next week, too.
Okay, yeah. So, yeah, we'll see. But I think we're – Clemson game is big enough where it's not just a one-game look ahead. It's a two-game look ahead. So we're looking ahead past Pittsburgh. We're looking ahead past Georgia Tech. We don't need to take it one game at a time, which is something Mike Tirico said last week. We can sort of see Clemson coming over the horizon. So it's going to be two more post-game reaction podcasts of like, was this good enough to beat Clemson or not? Before we do the podcast of, was it? Well, here's what happened.
I'll say that they're keeping it interesting. They're giving us something to talk about. I mean, between last week and this week for entirely different reasons. I don't know if they did last year. Last year was a very boring season outside of Michigan and Georgia, to be honest. And not, I don't say that because they lost. I say it because they were surprising performances for different reasons. But no, they're keeping it interesting. I mean, I think there's still a lot more to this team, as Brian Kelly said afterward, that we haven't seen and that we're going to need to see. But they're keeping it interesting. And the dynamics of the conference and having Clemson at home and really not having a home game of this magnitude since the Bush push are only upping the ante and only making us want to rush through these next few weeks that much more.
We will get there. We will get to November 7th, I promise. We've talked about it enough. So until we reconvene next week with our pregame podcast for the game that is two games before Clemson, also known as Pittsburgh, he's Matt Fortuna. I'm Pete Sampson. Thanks for being with us on the latest episode of The Shamrock.